The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Red Sox just picked up their fourth straight win against a really shitty team. I mean, if you want to put a positive spin on it, they just won against the 2007 NL pennant winners. The last time the Rockies were good. So I don't know. I'm just hoping we can convince them to take back Trevor Story by the end of the series. Please just take all the money. Maybe we'll slip in something for you. But give him Romy or something. But how are you guys?
I'm well.
Doing okay. It was a kind of a weird, wacky game to watch, and some interesting things happened. But it was good to see, you know, they did what they had to do, and they put the ball in play for the most part. They still struck out 10 times tonight, but, they did what they were supposed to do against a team like this.
And the crazy thing was Gomber only struck out two guys in his last three starts. But it's the Rockies.
Yeah, I think it is just the Rockies, but this has also been the Sox, right? Like in this season, we beat teams we shouldn't and we lose the teams we shouldn't. And for the last week or so, we're finally starting to like handle some business and beat the teams that we feel like we should beat. I mean, realistically, we probably should have swept the Reds if not for Greg Weissert. We'd be talking about, you know, a different scenario. But, I mean, six of the last seven, you'll take it as a Sox fan at this point.
The pitching gets better as the series goes on. So, I mean, it's already looking like a sweep after game one. But a couple things of note tonight. Seydon Rafaela just hit a piss missile there in the I think that was the final what was that would have been the eighth inning actually, but that dude just continues to rake.
He had a couple of tough at bats earlier in the game too, where he was chasing outside, and I think Lou Merlone had mentioned it in the broadcast. It's good to kind of see him have a couple of, you know, not great at bats and then come back with that one where he absolutely destroyed the baseball.
Yeah, I think it's his third game in a row now with a home run. So, I mean, he's been raking. He's picked it up, I would say, the last month or so because he got off to a pretty putrid start. Was very hot and cold. Couldn't seem to put it together. And I'd say for the last month and a half, been putting together, you know, decent at bats. And he's hitting the ball out of the park. So, and listen, he gives a stellar defense. So there's not much to complain about. I know my hashtag says Seydon is an all-star. I was getting into it with a couple of fans today because people were like, how is Jazz Chisholm an all-star and not Seydon Rafaela? I was like, well, one wears pinstripes, one doesn't. So it's just unfortunately how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Unfortunately, that is exactly how it crumbles. Another guy that is making a lot of noise. I'm trying to get his line for tonight. Roman Anthony, 3-for-5 tonight, drove in two, hit a home run early on to kind of get the Red Sox up 3-1. And just looking at his splits here, take a guess at his batting average against lefties.
.320.
I'm going to go 285.
Mark was closer. 273, but that's still really good. Your best hitter on the team right now, overall, is, say, Don Rafaela hitting 263. So Anthony's batting average just against lefties is higher than Rafaela. So actually, well, Romy, these are everyday players. I think Romy's hitting over three, but still.
Yeah, Toro's close, but he's not. He hasn't been playing every day. I mean, he is now because people got hurt, but it's good to see. It's just good to see Roman Anthony's batting average get into the respectable area, because I think he's hitting 250 now. As of before the game, I think it was. So his general overall batting average, you know. It's just good to see. This is what we were promised, and it's nice to see him. I mean, his homer was an absolute, you know, monster blast. And it's fun to see it, because we've been promised it from Sam Kennedy for such a long time, and now it's kind of manifesting finally.
Yeah, it was encouraging to see him start to put things together, but especially the power, because all you've been hearing, especially as he started to kind of pick it up and start to get some hits and string it along, is like, oh man, he's hitting these missile ground balls into the field down the gap for like, and I'm like, all right, that's great. But like, all we heard about was this kid's power and that he was going to drive balls, you know, over the fence. And his home run was very reminiscent of Xander Bogaerts' home run, that wild card game against the Yankees off Gerrit Cole. It looked very similar, but it was good to see. And it's good to see that the kid is, you know, he's got swag. He's got some confidence. Would be great if he could still mitigate some of the poor defensive play, because he still has, you know, one out of every three games he makes a play on defense where you're like, oof, that doesn't look like a number one prospect in baseball. But, you know, you take it if he's hitting it like this.
One of the things that jumps out to me about Anthony, two things. Number one, his on base is 103 points higher than his batting average. His batting average, like Mark says, an even 250. 353 on base. But the most impressive thing of all to me is that he's doing it from the three hole. I mean, Rafaela has had to hit in the nine hole, and we've just had to keep him there because at least if he gets on, he's got speed. Then the top of the lineup comes up and Rafaela can be a little bit more of a weapon. Since he's started to break out here, you know, in early June, Rafaela has kind of moved a little further up the order, hitting, you know, as high as seventh, I think. But Anthony, the whole time, you haven't really had to hide him. You know, he's been hitting basically right in the middle of the order, at least since they left the West Coast, and the dude's raking.
Yeah, and they said they didn't want to put too much pressure on him, but they, you know, to your point, they put him in that three hole. He's pretty much been there, and he's handled it. You know, got off to a little bit of a slow start, but it was nice to see him hit his first Fenway homer today, too. It seemed like, I don't know if when you guys saw the broadcast, if you saw Meyer kind of, you know, kind of looking at him, and he's like, word, man, like, good job. And it was kind of nice to see, because obviously these guys have played together a long time in the minors together. So, yeah, he's a fun player to watch. And, you know, yeah, the defensive lapses, I think it was in that Cincinnati game, the second game where he kind of lobbed it in and he didn't throw it. He didn't, you know, unload it to second base where he probably could have gotten the force on the guy. And I think that's just, you know, mental mistake more than a physical mistake. Although he did airmail it a little bit, but I think he'll get there.
Yeah, I would say it's just weird. He just seems so professional at the plate in his approach and the way he does everything offensively. There's almost some sort of, like, I don't want to say immaturity, but like, as far as he's missing some of the maturity that he brings to the plate in his approach when he's playing defense. And I don't know what it is. And I'm sure he'll grow out of it. I'm sure they'll figure out, you know, make some sort of adjustments where he needs to be. He may not be in the right place depending on who the hitter is and not be reading, you know, the statistics there. So see as it goes on.
Nate Eaton hit the ladder today, and then
no pun intended.
Yeah, and then something else happened defensively. But let's start with the ladder. When that ball, I was watching it, and I forget which camera angle was, but the ball bounced straight up. So my initial reaction was it just hit the shelf on top of the monster, and it was a home run.
Yeah,
and then O'Brien's like, no, that hit the ladder, and I took the Fenway Park tour. You know, you show up early, you pay 20 or 30 bucks or whatever, and this old guy takes you around, and it was fine. I mean, I enjoyed it. But I'm almost positive he said on the tour, this must have been about 2012 or something like that, that nobody's ever hit the ladder. And by the sounds of it, O'Brien had never seen it either. So I'm wondering if more will come out about that, but it's like, it's kind of crazy to me because I'm like, it's been there the whole time. I mean, how could it not be hit? And it's not in, you know, it's closer to the foul pole than it is the center field, you know, the one that they draw on the monster there for the ground rule. But it's like it shouldn't be that hard, but apparently it is.
Yeah, Mike Lowell said that he's only seen it twice, and that was in batting practice. So he says he's never seen it in a game. I've personally never seen it in a game. I don't ever remember anyone hitting the ladder. But, I'm getting up there in age, too, so I may have seen it when I was a kid and forgotten, but I don't know.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone hit the ladder. I've been watching the Sox as long as some, but it's hard for me to believe, though, it is as old as Fenway Park is, although granted, the monster is not as old as Fenway Park, and obviously some of the dimensions and some of the things that are on it have changed. I don't know if you guys noticed the dent in where supposedly the ball hit. Like, was that dent in that pole, like that step from that ball, or was that already there?
I would say it was probably there.
I'm going to go with it was there.
I was going to say, I was like, wow, you really smoked that ball.
Because it kind of – I mean, it wasn't like it hit it on a line drive. It kind of went – it kind of popped right onto the top of the ladder. So I don't think it dented that.
Might have been from the Savannah Banana game too. Who knows?
Yeah, which I went to, by the way. It was fun. I went Sunday.
I wonder if it got like damaged during the filming of Ted. You remember that scene? I don't know. We need an investigation.
We're going to investigate this.
Yeah. And then we don't have to get too into it. He had that weird play where he should have just tagged the runner, and then he had a brain fart and then tried to go to second, and then the runner kind of skirted around him and initially was called off the base path, and then a meeting happened and it got overturned. So I didn't really have a problem with the call because it seemed like Eaton was already turning as the runner started skirting. So I don't know. It's one of those weird plays you seldom ever see. It was a weird night.
He definitely didn't like put it, you know what I mean? He didn't like put his glove out like that or try to reach out for him and then, you know, decide to throw to first. He ran at him, kind of looked at him, and then the guy goes around him and then he can't throw to first. It was very, very bizarre. It's like, just tag the guy, get the out. Who cares if the run scores at that point? You've committed.
Yeah, it was almost like when the guy stopped running, he assumed, oh, like he's automatically out, and then just didn't know what to do from that point. It was an odd play, but luckily it didn't cost us.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a weapon on the base pass. He stole, what was it? He went from first to second and then tried stealing, I think, third, and then got initially was safe, but then ruled out. Yeah. So he's probably, I can't imagine, Nick and I were talking about him last night, but he's probably going to be the first one to be optioned when Bregman gets called up here, probably in game one of the Tampa series is what they're targeting. I guess he had an aggressive workout day today. He's going to have one more tomorrow. And if he bounces back without any lingering effects, he's going to be activated. So no rehab starts, just straight onto the big club. So how much of an impact do we think he's going to have right away?
Go ahead, Chris.
Honestly, I would say he's going to have a huge emotional impact, especially the way that we're playing currently and going into that race series. I'll tell you what, if somehow we sweep this series, which is looking like more likely than not from a percentage standpoint, and if the Rays just keep dropping games, that four-game series going into the All-Star break is going to be super interesting.
Yeah, Tampa's been on quite a losing streak. And last I checked, this was probably about 20 minutes ago, they were down 5-1 in the seventh or eighth inning. So
they lost.
Did they lose? Okay.
Yeah, 5-1.
Yeah. And the Tigers, obviously, not the team you want to be facing if you're, you know.
No, but they lost the Twins week. On a bunt on Saturday, which was like the most peculiar way to lose.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So So Bregman will be back, and it looks like Yoshida could be activated as early as Wednesday. So that'll be really interesting. I think we all know Bregman's gonna be an impact guy here more sooner than later if he's not right away. Tampa's got some really good pitching, so who knows how that's gonna go for Bregman? But Yoshida's really the curious case here. Hasn't really had a professional at bat in a year and a half. So.
Yeah. And he's down in, he's up in Portland, right? He's not in Worcester.
I don't know. I misspoke there. Not even almost a year for Yoshida, mm-hmm. but I don't know where he's been rehabbing. I know Hauk just had his rehab start in Portland.
I think he has been, in Worcester. I think Hauk's the one that's in Portland.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I thought I saw him with the
I think Jeremy actually sent us that picture. He saw Yoshida.
Okay. Yeah, he did actually. That's right. Yeah. So we'll see what happens on Wednesday when he's presumably slotted into the DH. So there was a firing in Major League Baseball here. Before we get to that, like, are we buying this team? Like, where are you guys at? I'm not buying it right now.
I don't know. I'm not necessarily buying it, but I'm in a position where I've got my hand in my pocket touching the money. You know, I don't know if I'm spending it yet, but they're doing things that they weren't doing before, which is winning the games they should win, and in convincing fashion. Like, we're not just beating teams. We're obliterating them at this point, which, you know, there's something like, you should beat them. Yeah, well, we are beating them. We're also obliterating them. So, and it's consistent at this point. I think that we have a large enough sample size over the last 2 months, too, where the starting pitching has turned it around. It's not just against bad teams. It's against good teams, too. I know, Terry, you talked about Giolito. Like, he's in a position now where he's going to be like comeback player of the year at this point, the way he's performing. So like, there's enough there where I think with the right moves and the right situation, if they put themselves in that situation, this could be an interesting second half. So I'm not quite touching the money, but the hands in the pocket.
Yeah. I just don't want them to do, like they did a couple of years ago, which was I don't know if you guys remember this. They like were buying and selling, and it just didn't make any sense. I think that's the year they,
that was the
traded
year that
Vasquez.
Vasquez. Yep.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, so we're selling. And then he added like a bunch of bullpen pieces. And it was just confusing. I think the message that ownership kind of, whether they obviously didn't intend to do this, but the message that ownership sent to the Red Sox was basically like, we don't even know if we're buyers or sellers. We're in these trade conversations. And if it makes sense, it makes sense. So you know, I think at this point, the only thing that I would really be willing to part with as far, and I know they got a log jam in the outfield, but like, I really would like another starting pitcher.
Yeah, like a, I mean, another like starting pitcher, outfielder, logjam. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely options as far as things that we need, and we definitely have pieces to be able to get some players. I mean, there's some interesting moves that could potentially we talk about in the war room. I won't spoil it because we might have some stuff that we're going to write some articles about. Before we get into your point, Terry, I think because this will lead into it pretty well. I agree with you, Mark. I don't want to see like half pregnant, like just commit to something. And just, if we're going to buy, buy. And if we're going to sell, sell. And I'll accept it either way. But just have the conviction and make the moves. What I also don't want to see is I don't want to see the front office going out there and campaigning that Breslow has, you know, their blessing to do whatever he wants. And then them allow him to get away with not doing something or doing this half-half. If the front office is serious about winning and they really mean that they're giving the blessing and that there's a mandate to win, I'm telling you right now, if he pulls one of these Heim Bloom trade deadlines where we either do nothing or we don't know what we're doing, fire him day after. And I know they won't, but like that's what I want to see. And if you really care and you really care about winning and you're putting the conviction and the mandate out there, and the guy doesn't get it done, and that was the knock on Heim Bloom and why they ultimately fired him, then you need to fire this guy right after and just ride it out. Because he's going to get fired at the end of the season anyway. You don't need a GM to finish your season.
Here's where I'm at. We've only really had two good series in a row, and this will probably be three in a row by the end of it. But, you know, you sweep the Nationals, you take two out of three against the Reds. I thought the Reds would probably win that series, but we ended up winning that one. But then you lose two out of three to the Blue Jays. You get swept by the Angels. Then the Giants series was before that. You dropped two there. So, you know, we're only beating up on the bad teams right now. And yeah, we've put up a ton of runs, and it started in the one Blue Jays game we did win, which was 15-1. That was game two in that series. We dropped the first and third one. And then, you know, of course, we've been off to the races since then. You had that one Reds pitcher that was tipping. Then you score 11, 10, and 6 runs respectively against the Nationals, 9 tonight against the Rockies. But these are just bad teams, and once you start facing those good rotations again, I know you're getting Bregman back, so theoretically that'll help, but I just don't think it's quite the same. And then getting to what you guys were just talking about, it really looks like they are going to buy and sell. I mean, those are what the whispers are right now. Papelbon was just mentioning it the other night, and he seems to be pretty close to the pulse of what's going on. And so, I mean, it looks like Duran is probably all but gone, I think, at this point, as crazy as that sounds. I don't think there's going to be a major move here. I think it's all going to be short-term guys that we get, or prospects that we won't see for a while. We've already done it in the Devers trade with Tibbs. I think Kyle Harrison is your pitcher that you're going to get, and probably not good enough, but I think he is the guy. And you're getting Houck back. I just can't see them getting a pitcher. Do we need one? Yes, absolutely. And ideally someone that's controllable for the next few years. That's what you need. That would be a successful trade deadline. But I don't think Breslow has that type of move in him. And then when you look at this lineup, as I said last night when it was Nick and I, your outfield is crowded. You're probably not going to add to it. Now, I did express a ton of interest in Fernando Tatis. If you really want to flip the narrative for your franchise, go get a guy like that, you know. I think that's probably in the pipe dream category, but But aside from that, you're getting Bregman back. You're getting Yoshida back. So you're not going to add to DH. You're not going to add on the corners. Story's playing short. Meyer's playing second. So you could go get a first baseman, I guess. But I just don't think they're going to mess with it. I think this is the team. I really think that this is the team. And there's one player on this team that's really going to tell me if this team's committed to winning. If this player gets traded, Aroldis Chapman. If you trade him, I would define us as sellers at the deadline, because I don't think our bullpen is good enough to not have Aroldis Chapman pitching the ninth. Whitlock's been good, and a couple other guys have been good, but you also got some guys that are cooked right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. If Chapman goes, that's they're punting on the season, or at least they're, you know, we'd have to see the return. But to your point, Terry, I don't know. I mean, who else are you going to get on this roster? You getting guys back. So you got to see how they perform. And by the way, I'm surprised the Red Sox haven't said this yet, but they haven't done the, as far as I know, I haven't consumed any of this Sam Kennedy rhetoric of, well, we don't have to do much at the trade line because we're getting Bregman back, and we're getting Yoshida back, and we're getting Hauk back. And that's like making a trade. It's like, but it's not. So it's the same guys you've been not making the playoffs with for the past couple of years. So, I know Bregman's new, but, guys like Hauk and Tushita, again, I think part of the problem with this team, and especially with Bregman gone, Devers gone, is knowing how to win, right? Because there's a lot of young guys on the team, and there's a lot of guys who haven't experienced it yet. That's why Bregman is so invaluable. And kind of to your point earlier, Chris, right? How impactful is he going to be? Maybe him just being in the dugout,
Yeah. And I think, you could say the same thing about Chapman, right? Like, we all have our feelings about Chapman, but he's done more winning in his career than losing. And I think from start to finish throughout the season, relative to their individual roles and responsibilities, he's been the best player we've had on this team when you take injuries into account. And I think you're 100% right, Terry. We've been saying it for a long time now. He really is the bellwether of, are we going to be buyers or sellers? If he's gone, then no matter what we do, you are telling the fan base that it's about 2026. If we keep him, I mean, it could still be about 2026. We could keep him and do nothing else, which wouldn't shock me either. But yeah, I mean, I would be frustrated with that. To your point before, Terry, as far as that, the wins that we've had lately and then the series we've lost, I don't disagree. What I would say is that in some of the series that we've lost previously, specifically Giants, the Reds, we're a reliever away from winning those series, and in some cases sweeping. That last game in San Francisco where we hit a million home runs, but then we were just giving up two home runs for every home run we hit because our relievers can't pitch in high leverage situations. This team, it's close in some regards in this American League. I'm not talking about to win a World Series. That's the other thing too, is people are like, oh, well, we got to play good teams. There are no good teams in the American League. Even the Tigers can be beaten. They've looked very beatable as of late. I still think they're class. I don't even think the Sox are in their stratosphere. But if the American League was even half as good, the Tigers are a wild card team in comparison to what the American League used to be. So, but removing them, there is no other good team. The Yankees, we see what the Yankees are. The Rays are falling apart at the seams. Yeah, the Blue Jays are on a heater, but we've also seen they're the type of team that can go and lose 12 in a row, just as simply as they win 12 in a row. I do think they're the class of our division at this point. But I mean, really, outside of that, am I scared of anyone from the West? No. The Astros are starting to get hot, but I mean, I think they're pretty beatable. If we were in the National League, I think it's a different story, but this is our best shot at this point with what we've had the last 5 years. And I'm not saying it's good enough. And again, not saying I'm touching the money, but I think things are interesting enough and they've done enough that we should be interested in making some moves if they're out there to be had. And I do think there's some to be had, and I think we have the pieces to do it.
I just want to see Breslow be a big market GM. I want to see him make a bold trade, something unforeseen, something that just sparks our imaginations and be like, wow, what a trade that was. And again, I just don't think he's innovative enough. I don't think he's confident enough. And I think it's going to be more of the same. And Heim Bloom got fired because, in large part, because of his performance at the trade deadline, the whole analysis paralysis that he would get, and then nothing got done. You know, not trading Justin Turner for Edward Cabrera from the Marlins straight up. That was out there if he wanted it, but he wouldn't do it. So I don't know. There's another guy in the chat here. His name's Chris, was saying up above, the Red Sox should trade Yoshida and a prospect. That's not happening. Nobody wants Masataka Yoshida.
You'd have to eat so much of the money, it wouldn't make sense trading him.
Absolutely. If you're going to move someone to clear money, I think Story at this point is a more realistic candidate, and even he's a long shot.
Yeah, because there's someone out there that you could sell that he's worth something with the performance that he's had the last 2 months. Man, Terry, I'm shocked. You didn't think it was innovative and shocking enough to trade your best player after you just swept the New York Yankees?
It was definitely shocking.
I'm kidding.
I don't know if it was innovative, but it was shocking.
No, it's certainly shocking.
Devers, I haven't seen anything tonight. I don't even know if San Francisco's playing, but he does have a 5 or 6 game hitting streak with 3 doubles and 3 walks mixed in there. No homers in that streak, but he's starting to figure it out. And I just think Devers is the type of player when he's hit with a somewhat jarring set of circumstances, it takes him a little while to get going again. And I think that's what that was. I mean, just imagine if he was in tonight's lineup, how potent it would have been. You know, what if he was hitting in front of Anthony? I still can't believe we traded him. But anyway, so there was a firing over the weekend, I guess yesterday it happened on Sunday. And I was telling Nick, I said, at least one or two executives will get fired after the trade deadline. But it happened yesterday with the Nationals, and it was Mike Rizzo. And I was a little surprised. I meant to look up to see where their farm was exactly. I can probably do that in a minute. But last I checked, they had the second or third best farm. And I just figured they were waiting. They were kind of in a similar position that we were in. You're just kind of waiting for that core of prospects to kind of catch up, and then you're going to go all in. And the Lerner family, who owns the Nationals, they are literally the wealthiest owners in Major League Baseball, more wealthy than Steve Cohen. And so when he got fired, I was like, wow, that's surprising. And Dave Martinez, the manager, got fired. That's nowhere near as surprising. And I'm surprised he hadn't been fired previously. But when you see a move like that with a guy who's won a championship as an executive fairly recently, you can't help but wonder, you know, would he be a fit for the Red Sox if they were to call him? Because if you remember, in 2015, Dombrowski was fired by the Tigers, and then a phone call happened. It was the 2 weeks before he got hired, it was the most unforeseen thing ever. Then he gets fired. Then he's in the Red Sox front office. So I'm not a big after doing a deep dive into Rizzo, he's not a guy I would want. But what are you guys' thoughts? Chris, why don't you lead off?
Well, I mean, you may not like him or be that sold on him, but I think whether anyone likes it or not, he's probably the best that you could get if we get rid of Breslow. Like, that's going to be the tier level of the type of GM that's going to be top tier, quote unquote, that's going to want this position if we get rid of Breslow. I don't necessarily know. I'd have to do a little bit more research myself to have an opinion. I think, like, at a surface level, just knowing what I know, that he did well in the Soto trade. I don't necessarily know the amount of support he was getting from ownership. And I don't know really how much better he would do here. You know, their situation seems very reminiscent to ours the last 5 or 6 years, right? Like, we got rid of Mookie Betts, we got rid of Devers, the Devers will be remain to be seen to this point. We got nothing out of the Betts trade. He did a hell of a lot better in getting rid of Soto. I recognize contracts, how much money was still left plays a factor in that, but they weren't signing any free agents. And I know I talked about it with you, Terry, that, like, reminds me somewhat of even like San Francisco, right? Like, San Francisco tries to hand out money and they can't. No one wants to sign with the Nationals. They're just not that type of market at this point. So even if he wanted to and he did have the support, I don't know how much better he really could have done. To your point, at a quick glance here, it looks like it's skewed. There's some that have him ranked as third, some as seventh, some as fifth. So let's just say conservatively, somewhere probably close to top five farm system in Major League Baseball. I mean, he's won a World Series. I don't know much more what you could expect if people won't take your money. So, I mean, he's probably an improvement over what we have. That's my thoughts.
I did a little bit of research on this. This is written by a guy named Gabe Laquest. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, French last name. USA Today. And he basically was expressing, like, mercifully they fired both those guys. Rizzo may have put together a good farm system, but since 2020, the Nationals have been over 500 for a grand total of 6 games. They were 4 games out of 4 games above 500 in 2021. And that, I think that the latest was June. And then they were 2 games over 500 at one point last year. And that was in May. So I think a lot like what happened with Chaim Bloom is because I think Chaim Bloom got fired for two reasons. Number one, and I think they correlate, trade deadline miscues and analysis by paralysis. And then I think that's a product of also, like, because you're not making these moves, you're not putting a winning team on the field. Right. And, you know, I've stated this a lot privately with a buddy of mine, but, you know, they backed into the 2021 playoffs and then they went on a little run. But they almost didn't make the playoffs in 2021 as well. I think they were like, I think they had to win their last game.
They had to beat the Nationals.
Right. To win the wild, ironically, right? So they had to beat the Nationals, which they did. And then they got them into the wild card and then they went on that little run. But, you know, we could be sitting here saying we haven't made the playoffs since 2018, you know? And I know that's revisionist history, but that's just how I feel about that.
So here's my complaints about Rizzo. He doesn't particularly draft well. I mean, Bryce Harper was obviously a big one, but you're going all the way back to 2010. Trey Turner was another one, you know, in the mid, you know, 20-teens or whatever. Soto was a very good international signing. I don't really recall any homegrown pitching outside of Strasburg. And even he was up and down, had a Tommy John, infamously took himself out of a postseason because of pitch counts. A lot of people thought the Nationals would have won it that year. But you know, so there hasn't really been homegrown pitching. They hit pretty well on Max Scherzer in 2015. They got Patrick Corbin, which I thought at the time was a good signing, but he ended up being complete trash. So we've had our struggles with pitching, not quite as bad as the Nationals, but we've had our struggles. So I think bringing a guy like Rizzo in could be a step backwards in terms of infrastructure and development. I would just be a little concerned there. Another thing that I heard, I listened to a Nationals podcast earlier, which is where I've been getting a lot of this. And it was specifically the Locked On podcast, if anyone wants to go listen to it. But he's also not super savvy when it comes to analytics. And I think teams can get too hardcore, but I think they do have a place as well. I think they should be looked at and utilized in various ways. But I don't... When it gets to the point where you're defining a player who's only in his second or third year based on the analytics, that's where I start to have problems. Like, you should use that as a tool to help them improve, I believe. But anyway, so when that name popped up, it seemed like there were some people out there that view him as this highly respected executive, and perhaps he's going to land somewhere else and make a big impact. I'm not so sure.
There's someone in the chat, George, who's saying basically what I've been saying is that the Red Sox and the Washington Nationals have kind of been the same exact team. They both won a World Series, and since then have been hovering around 500, which has been true for us, been true for them. They've probably been, to your point, Terry, a little bit hamstrung of not evolving with Major League Baseball, whereas we've been the opposite. I think maybe we've been probably too close to going the other way with it. I do agree with you that if you're going to get a GM that's going to be leaning on the side of caution when it comes to analytics, it's got to be a proven winner that knows how to execute deals, more like a Dombrowski. Not that he's not a guy that, you know, takes analytics, but I would say he's probably on the other side of the spectrum, but he clearly knows how to, you know, make a deal and win a World Series. So,
yeah, the pitching thing, Terry, great point. Like, once I heard that, I'm like, no, we've struggled enough to draft and develop young pitchers, and we finally have, you know, a couple of serviceable ones here now with Brian Bayo and I know we got Fitz in a trade. He's not homegrown, right?
Yeah, we got him from the Yankees. Yankees, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, but, you know, he's still a young guy that we can look to develop. You know, Hauk took a step back, but I know he's been hurt. But that scares me because for so many years, to your point, it was like John Lester and then like 10 years of nobody.
Exactly. And I think Breslow's saving grace is that he has built up the pitching infrastructure. You know, that's why you're getting guys like Fitz, Dobbins, you know, Crawford was already kind of showing flashes of it before Breslow got hired. But I don't know. And Giolito has been a very successful reclamation project. A few other teams, as I said recently, couldn't fix him. So that's really been Breslow's saving grace. But I, like I said, I don't think Breslow's a problem solver. I don't think there's been a lot of people in the stream here defending him. But I just, there's nothing innovative about him. And he's inexperienced and he seems to be a bit gun shy. We've got all this major surplus of players. You can streamline this team a lot better than it's currently constituted and gain assets at the same time. And we just haven't seen that from him. So, and I don't think he really has the personality to be a leader in the executive sense. He's alienated himself from most of that front office. We don't know what his relationship with Cora is. I have a feeling perhaps maybe it's better than we thought it was a month ago, but I don't think they're besties. I don't think they're going out for ice cream after the games. And, you know, and then the whole Devers thing. I mean, he just completely lost control of the organization while all that was going down and shipped him out of town. And I think we're going to look back on that with some regret. So yeah. So anyway, let's just get to tomorrow real quick. Brian Bayo is crap. Let me get it up real quick. It's Brian Bayo versus, I think, Senzatella, who's been getting absolutely torched. Oh, no, that's against... No, Senzatella is on Wednesday against Giolito. So Kyle Freeland versus Brian Bayo. Freeland's another lefty, so Alex Cora is probably going to have another creative lineup. You're probably not going to see Meyer starting, so... Lots of Romy, perhaps even Ref Snyder will get some at-bats at DH. But let's see. Freeland, 6 innings in his last start against the Houston Astros. Only gave up 3 runs. Only struck out 2. Start before that, he got lit up by the Brewers. Only struck out 2 there. And then faced the Giants 3 starts ago, 3 earned runs, 5 strikeouts. So I don't, the way we murder lefties, I really don't see this. I don't really see this getting too sideways unless Bayo just completely loses his mind.
Yeah, I would agree. I hate to say it because I'm scared saying it, but I expect a sweep at this point, and I'm looking forward going into that Tampa series and really seeing how they do going into it. Super interesting if we're just absolutely on fire and they're just completely falling off a cliff, how both teams respond to that.
Yeah, I think Bay will be fine tomorrow. That's, you know, looking at that lineup of Rockies tonight, I was like, you know, I knew 2 or 3 names. You know, and then it's like they don't have a good lineup. That's the hot take of the year, but they really don't have a good lineup.
Yeah, the point we didn't mention, and I got to be honest, I forgot about this until the broadcast said it after the game. Dickie Fitz got his first win in 12 tries, and, it's to his credit because he's pitched so well throughout his short career to this point that I forgot he hasn't gotten a win. Like he's pitched against the Yankees a couple times. We've won those games. He hadn't necessarily gotten the win, and you know, credit to him. Congrats to him. But yeah, no, it was good to see him finally get a win, specifically in front of the Fenway crowd.
Yeah, it was a little bit deceptive because even I think they said it on the broadcast. I think his ERA is in the mid 3s, but
3.3, yeah.
Yeah, and he had that one lousy start against the Angels, which kind of raise that even higher. So, you know, he's been very, very effective and he's got good stuff. I mean, I enjoy watching him pitch. I think he does a good job.
Yeah. What impressed me the most today is like today could have been a game where we fell flat on our face when they took that 1-0 lead and they had 2nd and 3rd and he got in a little bit of trouble. I'm like, oof, if this is 3-0 before we even get a bat, this is completely different than the games we've been playing in recently where we've been jumping on teams early. I was interested to see how we would respond to that, but he ended up getting out of it. And then sure as heck, we jumped on them. And next thing you know, it was 3-1, 5-3. And then, you know, never really looked back from there. So credit to him, credit to the team. Mm-hmm.
6 strikeouts too. And he's had a lot of starts where the punch outs haven't really been there. I want to say he should have got out of that 6th, but I want to say we had some defensive lapses or something, but Cora took him out with I think runners on 2nd and 3rd or 1st and 3rd, something like that. But yeah, all right, well, anyway, we will be back to discuss what did happen tomorrow night in the Bayo start. So hopefully I don't know They keep it rolling, and we're what, one game of two games above 500 now, I think. So we'll see what goes down. Everyone have a good Tuesday. Take care.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.